and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan, CEO of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Very exciting today, and a topic that is near and dear to me and that we've talked about before, wine. I'm a big wine lover. I've got a great wine room in my house. People know me all over Napa and Sonoma, not as well known anywhere else in the world as Napa and Sonoma, but wine is one of my passions, and I hope at the end of this, it will be one of yours. So today we're speaking with a real wine expert from the industry, not just an owner of a winery or not somebody that's got his arms in one particular winery, but he is a wine expert. As a matter of fact, he is a master of wine student right now. So we're talking with Peter Young. Peter is a business consultant. He's a wine consultant. He's an award-winning author, and he's a 2020 wine industry leader. So welcome, Peter.
Thanks for having me, Elliot.
Absolutely. We're going to do this for about 20 minutes or so. I'll ask some good questions for you, maybe some follow-up. And then at the end, I would love people for you to tell people the best way to reach you, what email you'd like, so they can ask you a wine question. Is that okay?
Of course.
Great. So let me start with a little bit about you first. How did you get into the wine business? How long have you been doing it? And what do you do?
It's a little bit of a long road. I actually have always liked wine. When I was in college, I bought wine and drank it a little bit more than everything else. I still drank Natty Ice and really cheap alcohol. But I bought wine from wine.com actually when I was in college. And one of the wines was a Barolo. And I opened it. It was not so expensive at the time, but still expensive for a college student. It was like $35, I think. I opened it in my room, and the whole room filled with the aroma of, you know, that tar and rose kind of aroma. And that got me just a lot more into wine. I still knew nothing about wine. I drank it more than probably the average bear because, you know, I would drink and forget everything the next day. But when I was a consultant, I worked for McKinsey & Company for about 4 years. And in the middle of that time, I took a sabbatical. And I studied wine in the wine immersion program at the Culinary Institute of America in St. Helena. And so I got to have class with be taught by Karen McNeil of the Wine Bible. And that kind of turned what was more of an interest into more of a passion. And it also gave me the baseline of wine knowledge so that even when I'm drunk, I can actually remember things. Like, you know, give me the terminology and like other elements that enabled me to actually learn and build knowledge over time. And, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do in wine then. I kind of knew I didn't really want to be in production and farming, and I didn't really want to work at a restaurant. So I was kind of confused. I went back into consulting, went to Silicon Valley for a little while in clean tech. And then finally, with the hopes of making some Silicon Valley money and then, you know, doing something in wine more independently. Our $3 billion IPO became a $700 million IPO. So I recovered the pay cut I took to go there. But so I needed a job still. But I thought, hey, I'm getting older. It may be time to make that plunge and make wine a full-time career and profession. And so in 2013, which was about 6 years after I did the CIA program, I started talking to people and networked around and really like did consulting projects for free or for wine just to build experience. I was in a weird place because I was senior from a business perspective in my career, but had no industry experience in wine. And so finally found someone to give me a chance and built up my career, worked part-time or got paid part-time for full-time work. And then the people I was working with, we ended up acquiring Kosta Browne, the winery in Sonoma. So I was on the management team for Kosta Browne in Sonoma and Realm Cellars in Napa. And then after the PE company that owned it, I helped lead the sale to sell Kosta Browne to the Duckhorn Group. And after that, I released a book, Luxury Wine Marketing, and became an independent consultant. So I consult people across the value chain from producers of wine to, you know, brokers to retailers to private equity companies looking to invest in wine and to software companies in the wine space. So it's a really business-based consulting with an expertise in the wine industry. I do actually have one new client where I help them manage. It's a large educational institution back east. I'm not allowed to say who it is, but they have their own endowment where they buy a lot of wine a year of pretty nice stuff. And I'm helping them organize their cellar of 13,000 bottles and help them purchase going forward. So that's a different type of work that I don't do every day, but it's a fun one.
Well, I know from being in the financial services business, we're financial advisors here. Wine marketing and marketing with wine is something that we're very passionate about. And I know you're passionate about it. So how does somebody become infected with the passion of wine? How do you transfer that? You've got it. Maybe you don't become it. You just become it. But how do you transfer that and really create a love for wine? Because there was a time in my life that I was just drinking Lambrusco and, you know, wines that I could afford at $8, $10, $5. And, you know, suddenly I'm drinking wines that are multiples of that, that are just big and red. How does you get that infectious passion?
I think it depends what you're interested in. For me and a lot of people who are actually in the wine industry, there was a wine that kind of opened their eyes and got them into wine. So for me, it was that, I think it was a 94 Manzoni Barolo. And so a lot of people in the wine industry have that like one singular wine that opened their eyes to it as a category. But I think for everyone and other people, it depends what you're interested in. Wine is such a broad and dynamic beverage and category and industry and you know, part of life. So there's food and wine element, there's history, biology, chemistry, geography. So depending on what your culture, depending on what you're interested in, wine has an element that brings that into you and makes it personal and makes it exciting for you. Because if you're excited about history, there's so much, you know, wine history and how wine was connected to it. You know, my mom is a Catholic, so I always joke that, well, Jesus, you know, is the blood of Christ's wine, right? So, you know, you have to drink wine. Versus people who are really into the science of it, or even the business side of it, wine is one of the first industries that really pioneered the subscription model that's very popular today. If you think of wine clubs, which have been around for decades, that was well before the rest of, you know, industries had a subscription model. Now, for the most part, wine is a little slow moving industry because it's very agricultural based and production cycles and lead times are very long. So it tends to move slowly, but there are some areas where wine is unique from a business perspective as well.
Well, you mentioned, I'm going to follow up on something you said, if I could, Peter. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the word Barolo, that's your first wine. For those of you that don't know Barolo comes from Northern Italy, from the Piedmont Mountains over there. It's an expensive product in the US. It's much more affordable in Europe, but it's their version of a big red wine. Of course, I'm a big red wine Napa person, pricey Zinfandel person. And most people that are going to be watching this are people that travel to Napa and Sonoma. Mm-hmm. So what do you like up in Napa and Sonoma? Why do you like it? And then the same question is, I get a lot of complaints since I like big reds. Well, Elliot, broaden your spectrum out and learn to like more Chardonnay and learn to like more Sauvignon Blanc and Fumé Blanc, the whites, along with your big reds. What do you think about that?
I think you have to drink what you like. You know, I think people have different taste preferences. Part of that's actually driven by physiology. There's work that Tim Hannay, who's a master of wine, put out. There's a book called Why You Like the Wines You Like, I think is his book's name. And he did a lot of research into people's physiology. So like your concentration of taste buds, and it's not a better or worse. People just have a different amount. And if you have a lower concentration of taste buds, you're more accepting of bitter. And so you can take bigger, bolder wines that have more flavor, have more concentration. If you have a very high concentration, that bitterness is overwhelming for you. And you prefer like lighter and sweeter wines, generally speaking. So, you know, there's that physiology and then there's a psychology to it where, you know, you think you teach yourself, it's like the acquired taste element. You teach yourself, oh, that wine is supposed to be good, so I'm going to like it. The more you drink it, you like it. And that's usually correlated with price. So I think people should drink the wines they like to drink and not be embarrassed by it. If you like sweet wine, hey, there's a lot of great sweet wines out there in the world to explore, not just the what we would think of cheaper things like a white Zinfandel, but you know, wonderful dessert wines that really change the imagination to other off-dry wines from Bouvray or other places. So drink what you like. And if you're interested in wine, you can learn more about it and start exploring the different types of wines that you like. So there's this notion, which I think is underappreciated for consumers, of wine style. That's the style of wine that you like. And you know, Elliot, that you like that big Napa cab that's structured and fruity. And so you probably also then like Amarone or something from Italy, right? That's also in a similar vein with fruitiness and a big structure and big bold taste. So I think, you know, if you understand the style of wine you like, you can then explore and find different things. In Napa and Sonoma, your questions of what I like there, I can tell you what I buy from and other ones that I like. In Napa, Napa is to me a bit of like the Las Vegas of wine. It's very expensive, so it's out of my budget for many of them. But I do buy some wine from Rivers Marie, which is Thomas Rivers Brown's own winery. I really enjoy the wines of Memento Mori. I think they're starting to be a little cultish. Wine that's unfortunately very hard to acquire, but the wines of McDonald are great and have, you know, a tremendous story behind it around the Tokalon River. So, you know, Napa has a lot of big Napa cab, and that's their main element and what people go for. And so I think those are some that are really great there. In Sonoma, Sonoma's more Pinot country. For you, Elliot, if you like really big wines and you want to try Pinots that you'll like, I think you'd really like the Donham Estate, which is in Carneros. So it's on the Sonoma-Napa border. And they have Pinot and Chardonnay, but in a style that's bigger and bolder. And so one I think you'd like, but yet very smooth textured. They also have one of the most amazing art collections, like external sculpture art collections out there. So I think, you know, from a visitation perspective, that's amazing. I do like those wines. I tend to buy more of lighter style Pinots from Sonoma. So I buy a lot from like Literai and Dumal. Who else do I buy? I like Windy Oaks, which isn't Napa and Sonoma, but that's the Santa Cruz Mountains. That's a very light style of Pinot. So you have to know the style you like, and then you can map the winery profile to it.
Now, Peter, that's great. I think in some ways you and I have opposite taste, which is good too. Since I prefer the big tannins, not just big fruit. I'm not a big fruit forward guy, but big tannin structured red wine of Napa, but big spicy zins, which are hard to find now, of Sonoma, not fruit forward. I'm not over the top fruit. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's a funny thing. And I was going to ask you, you talked about Barolo wine, Amarone wine, other wines of Italy. I've been to all these places in Italy and France. I'm going to do Eastern Europe very shortly. They make fun of Americans because we drink wine as a standalone product. They don't. They drink it with food. When I cook, I pick the wine first that I want to drink and then serve the food. I might serve a big red wine with salmon, as an example. And Europeans would cringe at that. What are your feelings?
Well, I think you can adjust the food easier than you can adjust the wine. The wine's a product that's in the bottle. And so you can adjust the food with acid, with salt, to make the pairing work, at least not be overly offensive. I think the wines of Europe, especially a place like Italy, all their red wines are very high tannin and very high acid. So you almost need food to drink it because it's very challenging to drink without food. Whereas American wines or other wines have more rounded tannins, lower levels of acid, and it's easier to drink as an aperitif or on its own. There are wines from around the world, like think of Argentine Malbecs. It's great with steak. It's also great with on its own. So I do think you do start with wine, and you can change the food or adjust the food to pair with the wine.
Great. So on the same note, I want to just talk about structure. I don't mean to make this about me here for one moment, but I'm sure there are lots of people that have the similar taste to me.
Totally.
And the fact that I like the big caps and the spicy reds, I also like 20-year-old 20 port, 30-year-old 20 port. I've drank 100-year-old 20 port, which is just too old. But 20 and 30 year is right in my sweet spot. 20, not Rubio. That means I like it in an oak barrel for those that are listening. And where they turn the oak barrel and they get the fruit out of it versus Rubio, where the fruit remains fruit forward and very red and bold like a bottle of wine. What does that say about somebody that likes what I like? Do I have not enough taste buds? Are we crude?
I think it means you like the spice element component, because tawny tends to be nuttier. They're in 550-liter old oak barrels, and they have oxygen impact. They get oxidized over time. There's rubies made in very big casks and then bottled, so it retains the fruitiness of it. So it's clear that I think you're not, as you said, not a big fruit guy, but you like the big structure and tannin. And so I think, you know, it's good. You know what you like, and then you can find and discover more things from it. I don't think there's anything wrong about that, but I think you definitely like the spice elements.
Good. Well, we use more, like I said earlier, we use wine as a marketing tool. For those of you that are listening that want to be part of that, please reach out to us. We'd love to include you on our list at future events. We've got one coming up this fall here at a country club. We've been talking with Peter Young. He's a business consultant. He's definitely, as you could tell, a credible wine consultant. He's a master of wine student. When do you graduate from that?
Well, it depends if I can pass the tasting part, which is always the challenge.
He's an award-winning author. He's a 2020 wine industry leader. Peter, if people have questions for you, what's the best way they can reach you?
Well, email peteryg@gmail.com, or LinkedIn is a good place to connect. I would also mention, Elliot, that I also host a podcast on the business of wine called Ex Chateau, which you can find on Apple Podcasts or any podcast player. So check that out if you're interested in the business of wine as well.
Is that EX or X?
Just X, the letter X, and then Chateau. Yeah.
I love that. I will definitely listen to that and count me in. And so, Peter, thank you very much for being part of this. I think for people that are trying to learn and grow in their wine knowledge, you're outstanding. I'm sure people have plenty of questions. For those of us that love drinking wine, have a passion for it, you've obviously got a passion in a more sophisticated type of way. I've got a passion as a wine lover. I think you've got a passion a little bit more as a wine student, which is great. And I love what you do, and I think you'd love what I do in its own way. And our paths crossing just is a win-win for everybody involved. So, Peter, thank you for being part of this today.
Thanks, Elliot. I'm looking forward to drinking some wine in your cellar soon.
Absolutely. I look forward to having you in Lafayette. Take care.